What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Diabetes in Athletics. My friend, Bubba Wilson. Bubba just told me he's going to be going back down to Spats. He's going to be speaking again. So if you're going to Spats, look for Bubba, say hi, and then tell him he's lucky that I introduced him to Spats, and now they're calling him to be a speaker all the time.
No
and
doubt.
He didn't invite me.
You're going to be gone, I think, anyway.
Maybe. I don't know.
See?
That's right. But you didn't ask me. You didn't know that, so unbelievable. So everybody was looking forward to our conversations headed down there again.
Well, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah, maybe next year. So, all right, this, we're talking about diabetes, is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/diabetes. sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/diabetes. All right, Bubba, I asked you to come and tell your story about diabetes. So you're diabetic, and just kind of tell your life story, how you dealt with it, and things like that.
How I dealt with it is not very well. So I won't give up my age. Yeah, well, I'm 48, and I got diagnosed when I was 25. It was interesting. It was during football season, and I had to go to the bathroom all the time. And so I said, all right, let me get a doctor's appointment. And I made a doctor's appointment saying, I think I got a bladder or urinary tract infection, something like that. And finally, my athletic trainer brain kicked in, and before my visit, I said, all right, idiot, it's not that, you're diabetic. And I didn't notice the weight loss. And so what happens is you urinate all the time because your body is trying to flush all this excess sugar that's in your system. So back in those days, a long, long time ago, you used to have to take a glucose tolerance test. I was able to avoid that because my blood sugar readings on two separate occasions at the doctor's office were almost 400. So he said, there's no doubt you're diabetic. So I started out on some oral medications, going to diabetes education that was required, got a meter, started checking my blood sugar multiple times a day. The interesting thing back then was, it's just like everything else, it changes. So back then it was stay away from protein, no bigger than the protein, no bigger than the palm of your hand. Carbs are your friend. Don't eat sugar. So diet drinks are your friend. Well, we know now carbs are not your friend and diet drinks are bad. Okay, well, diet drinks have always been bad, but they weren't as bad as a full sugar drink. So go along and work on it, taking one oral med that started with a half a pill that evolved to a full pill that evolved to a second medicine on top of that, which at some point turned into start taking injections of insulin, which then turns into another insulin on top of that, which turns into I went on the pump for about 5 years, got off the pump a couple years ago, and I'm actually transitioning back to try not to take any insulin at all. So let me define what the types of diabetes are to make it make sense. There's two types. There's type 1 and type 2. Old people know them as juvenile diabetes and adult onset. So juvenile is type 1. That means your pancreas is not making insulin. All right. So insulin is what our body uses to take care of sugar that's in our body. And there's some other things that go along with that in the endocrine system, but this is not the time or place for that. Type 2 diabetics are insulin resistant. So it's a little funny that an insulin resistant diabetic goes on insulin. I'm resistant to insulin. So basically what you're doing is you're just bombarding with the body with insulin and saying, I'll give you enough that at some point you're going to use some of it. And so the best example I can give is I got a buddy that plays the slots. He plays three machines at a time, $20 a pull, and he wins money. Now, that's a lot of money to be pulling, you know, at a time. And his philosophy is, I feed it so much that at some point it's going to get so full it's got to throw some of that money back up at me. That's kind of what they're doing with insulin. And there's different types. There's straight insulin, and there's long-lasting insulin, there's fast insulin. And so you've got all these different animals that all goes in there. You know, hundreds of drugs for diabetes. And so right now I'm trying to transition off of injections back to just oral meds only. The biggest thing for me is diet ain't happening, and exercise. I got a better chance of having a good diet than I do of exercising. What I have found, though, for me, stress raises my blood sugar level, and intense exercise will jack up your blood sugar level. The problem with me is with intense exercise, it takes longer for my blood sugar level to drop. Now, over time, that's beneficial. But the best thing for me is just to walk. If I can walk, mine just gradually drops and drops and drops, and it's no big deal. But if I do high-intensity exercise, and high intensity is relative. If you're out of shape, you know, jogging is high intensity. Mine'll scoot up there in the 250s plus, and then it takes a while, literally a day even sometimes, to come down. If you lose weight, your cells seem to be more receptive to the insulin that's in your body right now, and you can control your blood sugar. The other problem is over time, just throwing a bunch of stuff out, and we can get narrow it down. Over time with type 2s, is you kind of have a finite amount of insulin that your body's going to produce, and you will quit producing, and your insulin production will lower over time.
You said, is that just with type 2s or normal people?
Well, type 2s. Because a normal person, when let's say you eat a bowl of pasta, okay, your body's going to say, okay, spike in blood sugar because that's pasta is a carbohydrate, a simple carbohydrate. So your blood sugar spikes, your body throws insulin in to drop that blood sugar, okay? Or you eat 3 donuts, whatever it is. Mine, on the other hand, I eat 3 donuts, my blood sugar spikes, my body says insulin, my body throws out an appropriate amount of insulin in theory to take care of this, but my cells aren't receptive, so it throws more insulin out and more insulin out and more insulin out. So at some point, so now when we go, we're always checking my insulin, they always check your diabetics, your insulin production, which is, I don't know how it all works. So they look at what my numbers are, and there's a realm in there, a window of what it should be. Right now I'm making it. I'm on the lower end of making it. That could be my normal. We don't know. But over time you do decrease your production. So it's interesting, but it for a disease, it sucks, you know, because of all the side effects. So,
all right. So go back to age 25. That's when you kind of first found out that mm-hmm. you're diabetic. How often does that happen? Why, you know, is that genetic, that kind of thing?
Yes. It's genetic. So my great-grandmother had it. My grandmother had it. My mother's got it. It should be my sister, okay? If you look at it that way, it shouldn't be me. But it happened to be me. So genetics plays a part. Lifestyle plays a part. I don't exercise. I hate exercising. Runner's high to me. I've never experienced. I'll never experience, even though you're never supposed to say never. I was overweight. Bad diet. I was a Dr. Pepper fanatic at that time. And by fanatic, that was easily 4 a day, easy, if not more. So what am I doing? I'm fried foods, high-carb meals, sugary drinks, sweet tea, right? Because the other thing, I was thirsty. Not only am I going to the bathroom all the time, I'm thirsty all the time back then. That's one of the frequent urination, unquenchable thirst, and weight loss. Every now and then, somebody will go opposite and have weight gain, but typically it's weight loss. I had all three. It was a trifecta. That was fun. It was a trifecta of symptoms that, you know, that kind of drew me into the doctor's office. But genetics plays a huge part. And they, you know, if they can ever figure out some of that, you know, it's a win-win situation. So.
Okay. So theoretically, somebody in my situation, I'm 36 years old.
Okay.
I work out pretty regularly. I don't run a lot, and I don't drink sodas. I really drink water. You know, I'll drink sweet tea sometimes.
Right.
That kind of thing. I theoretically should be.
You lessen your chance.
Yeah, lessen my chance.
Yes.
So I'm a healthy weight, that kind of thing. So.
Does that say you can't get it? No, you can get it. I know guys that in their 30s that became type 1s, you know, that for whatever reason, their pancreas, you know, quit producing insulin. Could it be viral? It could be a lot of things. You've got a lot of teenagers that are now being diagnosed as type 2 diabetics, where in the past that was considered that adult onset, you know, where now you've got 12-year-olds being type 2 diabetics because of obesity, lack of exercise, and, you know, genetics that go with that. So, you know, it's just like anything else. You want to stave off the potential of heart disease, good diet, exercise, those things. The heart disease, the cancer stuff, and diabetes all float in there together as far as, you know, the better your diet is, the more exercise you have, lower your stress levels. Not saying you're not, but your chances are way low.
All right, and you mentioned that you're in the process of transitioning from insulin to not using it at all.
Right. So we're going to see.
So tell me, how does that work if you're already not making enough insulin or not absorbing it enough? How does that work, and what are the things you have to do?
Well, again, it's still all the same. It's diet. For me, it's diet and some type of movement. I'm not going to say exercise. Okay, so some type of movement. So if I can get a better diet that's lower in carbs, higher in protein, more fiber, a typical quote-unquote good, healthy diet, you know, that Brett or Roberta are always harping on, then I'm not flooding my body with, increased loads of sugar and then what insulin my body is producing, trying to force into my cells, that hopefully oral meds alone will allow those cells to take what insulin my body is throwing out there and utilize it appropriately. So, but when I, you know, if I go eat three donuts, it's over, right? You know, I mean, or three kolaches or a big pasta meal, you know, or French fries, you know.
And so it's just being really conscious about your diet.
Right.
So what are you doing as far as exercise?
Walk. That's it. I don't like running. I don't enjoy it. With what I do now, I don't have access to weights and stuff like that. I like to walk. Now, that gets boring around the neighborhood, you know, but I'm not going to go buy a treadmill. So, you know, I'll cruise around.
Gotcha. And then what about bicycling?
I don't own one anymore. I've thought about buying one, but again, it's difficult. The one street I'd have to go on, you might get hit. Once you get on the green belts, there's so many walkers, joggers, it's almost not worth trying to, you know, get on that and cycle around. So it's easier just to walk. And that's fine. I enjoy it.
I gotcha. All right. So tell me a little bit more about how you learned to deal with it at the beginning. I know you said you went to diabetes education.
Right.
And then how did that translate into your job as an athletic trainer and your, I guess, role as a mentor for possibly athletes or coaches that had diabetes?
Do as I say, not as I do. The hardest thing, I would say, from having diabetes, the hardest thing with what we do when I was in the school setting is not living on food from the concession stand. It's the easiest thing to do. You've got to bring a lunch. You've got to bring snacks. Lucky enough, we had a refrigerator. I had food in there. So there were just times you couldn't help it. Something happened and you weren't prepped to have to work after school that day, and you had something come up that you had to cover. But, you know, just having healthier options to eat versus, you know, going out to lunch and or eating out of that concession stand at 6 o'clock on a Friday night because you didn't bring anything else. And that's difficult to do. Some people are great at it. I know you know, it's second nature for you to bring your lunch.
Right.
It's not second nature for me to pack a lunch, you know. Now, it's easier to bring stuff up and leave it, but at the same time, that willpower to go get something, you know, off campus sometimes is pretty strong. And let's face it, there's just days like right now, it's kind of rainy out, and I'm like, oh, man, some chips and salsa, but it would be great. But I know if I'm going to have three chips, I'm going to have one basket of chips. That's the hardest thing, yeah. You know, is that portion control. And God bless those people that can do it. You know,
yeah,
I can't.
That's not me either. That's the same problem I have. Like, there's M&Ms. We have a stack of M&Ms because my youngest is learning to potty train. So he goes pee in the potty.
It's bribery.
M&M,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so the M&Ms are sitting on my counter. So I go pee in the potty too. So
yeah,
I get
right.
M&Ms, right? So, you know, and it's not just I get one or two M&Ms like we give him. I just get a handful of M&Ms.
And then you go back by again. You get another handful. Right.
Right. So, yeah, I'm definitely not on the portion control.
You know what? The other thing I found that's funny is, so I like to cook. Now, I'm not very good at it in the grand scheme of things, but so we'll be cooking at home, and my blood sugar at lunch was pretty good, and I had a healthy lunch meal, let's say. And so I'll be cooking, and I'll go, I know what we're going to have, so I know how many carbs are roughly going to be in it. So I'll go check my blood sugar, and I would go give myself my bolus of insulin for that meal. Well, then I'd look up, and my blood sugar's sky high. I'm like, what's going on? Well, I realize I'm a ninja snacker. So I'm cooking, but I'm snacking at the same time. So I'd say we're making fajitas. Where are you going to make guacamole? Well, if you got guacamole, what do you got?
You have chips.
Chips. Well, you got to taste the guacamole when you make it, right?
Right, of course.
And then it's still sitting there calling your name while you're doing something else. So you got to have more of it, right? So then you look up and you've had 25 chips and guacamole. Well, each chip is a gram of carbs. That's 25 carbs that are unaccounted for, you know,
gotcha.
Plus flour tortillas. Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, rice and beans, all those things that play a part. And so then you go, oh, I didn't factor that in. So then your 45-carb meal was a 90-carb meal because your math was bad because you had 25 grams of chips over here and forgot about that over there. So,
all right. So, talk about experience with athletes. How have you been able to help them, or what have some of the conversations you've been able to have with your athletes?
The biggest one is I had an athlete when I was at Kingwood get diagnosed when he was in high school with type 1 diabetes. So his insulin, his pancreas quit producing insulin. And so, you know, the biggest thing for him is like I said, the biggest one, besides the thirst and the urination is the loss of weight, because your body's just flushing fluid, you know, trying to get rid of the blood sugar. So like when I was diagnosed, I was 180 pounds. That made me look like I just came out of a concentration camp. I didn't look good. And the educator at the time, they measure your wrist, they do all this junk. He's like, you need to lose 5 more. And I said, lady, I need to gain about 10. You know, I at 180, I'm death warmed over. And so he was very weak at that point. So, but his job then was not to go back to play football. His job was to get his diabetes under control, get his, you know, his body back in shape. And then it was just a matter of, even though after he went through the education and his parents went through the education, reminding him to check his blood sugar before practice, does he need to eat something before he goes to practice? Because for those guys, it's way easier to burn that sugar off than it is for me, you know, because a little bit of insulin goes a long way on a type 1. And so, you know, those things, bringing a snack on the road trip, bringing a snack for a football game. And we would keep stuff too, you know, some Gatorade or whatever. But doing that, you know, I had an extra meter. Did he bring his meter? I forgot it. Here, check your blood sugar. And then learning how your body responds. You know what low blood sugar, after you've had it a couple times, you know what low blood sugar feels like. You know, we can function really well with high blood sugar in the grand scheme of things. Can't function at all with low blood sugar. And if you've ever had it, you're disoriented, you're unsteady, you're sweaty, you're confused. Happens typically at night. You wake up in a cold sweat, and I'm like, oh, my blood sugar's low. The problem for me is when I get it, I'll beat up little kids for their Halloween candy because I don't like how I feel. You know, so then it's going to the pantry, and whatever's there, I'm eating. 2 Pop-Tarts and, you know, crackers and this and that, because I want that to stop immediately, as opposed to just having something and being patient enough to wait 10 minutes. And if it doesn't get better, have a little bit more. But I hate how it feels. So, you know, you'll have a 62 blood sugar in the middle of the night that's bad. Gorge yourself to get it stopped, and you wake up with a 290 in the morning because you went crazy, you know. But that's the way it works.
All right, so you referenced those numbers, 62, 290. Earlier you said your numbers were somewhere around 400.
Right.
What is the average adult blood sugar?
80 to 120.
80 to 120?
Mm-hmm.
So about blood pressure.
Yeah, similar. You know, and so everybody's numbers are a little different. Like, you may be feeling low blood sugar at 85. I may be feeling it at 65 or vice versa. For me right now, if my numbers have been high, a low blood sugar episode for a non-controlled diabetic may be 150. Okay, but as they get under control, that number drops as well. But 80 to 120 is the normal. And then there's something known as an A1C, which is where they look at your red blood cells, and they can figure out off of that an average of your blood sugar for 3 months. And they do it 7.0 for diabetics is the number you want to be at or below. For the layperson, it's way below that. But, you know, they'll talk about pre-diabetes. I don't believe in pre-diabetes. It's like being a little bit pregnant. Either you are or you aren't. You know, it's like a partially torn ACL. There are variants, but either it's torn or it isn't torn. There's no, well, it's kind of torn, but it's not torn. So either you're diabetic or you're not, you're pregnant or you're not. So.
Gotcha. All right. So we have an athlete having a diabetic episode. Is that what you call it? An episode?
Sure.
Sure.
Look, so, it'd really be, they'd be hypo. Odds are good they'd be hypoglycemic, because they'd be more low blood sugar than high, but you can deal with the high too. So,
all right, so what do we do in that situation?
In the low blood sugar episode, we're giving them something with sugar in it. Now, that could be crackers. Crackers don't necessarily have sugar in them, but they have carbohydrates. Okay, so carbohydrates is a simple sugar. Your body easily takes that and converts it into sugar, and so that would help. So Gatorade, a sugary drink of some kind, Coke, Sprite, Dr. Pepper, whatever, candy. Let's face it, in low blood sugar, a Snickers bar is a good thing.
Right.
You know, those M&Ms are a good thing. So we always try to have them have a snack of some kind, and then make sure they have something for a low blood sugar episode. There's glucose tablets. I carry them in my backpack. I haven't used them in a while, but I think they're 5 grams of carbs a piece. So roughly, if I get a low blood sugar episode, I would eat 3 of those. That's 15. It ought to raise it up to where I feel good again. But, you know, everybody's a little different in how their body reacts to that. But if you were having one, I'd say drink half a Coke and you would probably feel better. You ever had your wife get cranky because she's hungry? She's hypoglycemic. She needs something to bring her blood sugar up. So
I remember in college we had the tubes of glucose tablets. And I used to, probably not a good idea, but I used to just go in there and like eat a couple of them just because they were right in there, you know. So probably not the wisest idea, and I'm sure I got in trouble for it.
Yeah, for you it's no big deal.
Right.
Unless you eat the last one and now you needed it for the diabetic, but you know, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, we didn't have a great storeroom or budget there at Houston Baptist, so.
Right. Those are pretty cheap, though. You can go to CVS and get them for a couple bucks, so.
All right, we talked about the athlete, but we have coaches here. You know, they can't drive the bus because they're diabetic. Mm-hmm. But if they're here at school at 6:45 and we have a varsity football game ending, you know, 11 o'clock or whatever, we're getting home, what are some of the things that I need to look for, and what are some of the ways that I can be proactive in preventing him from having a low?
A couple things. Having the snacks, okay, always. And, again, a snack can be I've got 3 Gatorade stash in case somebody gets low, you know, or 2 Cokes and a Gatorade, whatever it is. And then them bringing snacks, you know, making sure they're meal prepping, knowing that from basically 4 o'clock until they're done, they're not going to eat, you know, and maybe getting them in the habit of at some point before they leave for the game, checking their blood sugar to see where they're at. Now, it's a little easier. Now, you're going to move around, but if they're like me, the stress of a game, mine's going to creep up some. So I wasn't too worried about getting low during a game unless I was fairly low to begin with, meaning probably in a normal range, you know, because just the adrenaline of a game is going to creep that blood sugar up some. Now, the question is, how does your body respond to that? And that's a hard one to know. You know, mine's going to creep up and then it's going to sit there and stay for a while before it starts dropping. It doesn't just go up and then right back down, you know, typically for a type 2. A type 1, it will. They easily handle that insulin response much better than a type 2. But for them, you having snacks in case, them having something to eat in case, knowing what their blood sugar is before they get on the bus to leave, and then having, you know, having something available, maybe eating a little something at before the game or at halftime, peanut butter crackers. You know, that's about 30 carbs. That's fine. You know, to just make sure. You know, at that standpoint, I'd rather be a little high than a little low, you know, because, I can function and I can work to get it down. But if I drop in the middle of a game because it's low, I'm no good to anybody at that point.
Gotcha. What's your favorite reference for people? Obviously, they need to see their doctor if they're diabetic.
Right.
But,
you know, the American Diabetes Association has a lot of good stuff. There's a website called DLife, and they give a lot of great ideas on, you know, the old books, Eat This, Not That. Mm-hmm. They kind of talk about, you know, what fruits are higher in sugar than others or higher in carbohydrates than others. Fruits are a great thing to eat because it's a natural sugar, and your body deals with that in a different way than it does processed, right? It processes, boom, in you. And you get that response to high blood sugar quicker. A lot of good recipes there. A lot of good. I like smoothies, so I steal a lot of smoothie recipes out of there. But a lot of just general care tips come from there too. The biggest thing is checking your blood sugar regularly. And by regularly, that's at least 4 times a day, at least. If not, realistically, if you're going to do it right, you would do morning, which would also include your before breakfast, 2 hours after, 2 to 3 hours after. Before lunch, 2 or 3 hours after. Before dinner, 2 or 3 hours after. And then possibly one before bed. So that's 7, okay? So I don't do the 2 or 3 hours after. That's a pain, and my fingers can't handle it with all the, you know, sticking of my, with the lancets. So at least before every meal, and it's nice to go right before bed because if you're real high, you can do something to try to lower that. You know, or at least you know, and you need to look back and go, all right, why am I so high right now? Oh, yeah, I had 25 chips when I was making the guacamole. You know, those things.
Gotcha. So are there any injury recovery considerations?
Yes.
For a diabetic?
Any kind of incision. Typically, it takes longer to heal if you're a diabetic. I've had 4 shoulder surgeries, and all the stuff that's been repaired has come loose. And we believe that it may be because of diabetes that I'm just not healing like a normal person would heal. Also with diabetics, there's something called diabetic retinopathy. So I have to get my eyes checked every year, and we're looking for busted blood vessels within the eye due to high blood sugar. And then then there's also neuropathy. Typically in the high school athlete, this isn't a problem. College athlete, not a problem. But as you go and you're not controlled, you lose sensation in your extremities, like fingertips or toes. So you cut your foot and you don't know it because it's numb. Now it's infected and you've had to lose two toes. But the biggest thing is if your blood sugar is under control, you're less prone to getting sick, and cuts and wounds heal normal at that point. You know, we're not having to, you know, the week, 2 weeks of stitches may go to three on a diabetic to make sure they're going to close type deal. Then it depends on if you're controlled or not.
Gotcha. All right. So you talked about the busted blood vessels in the eyes. Is there any restrictions with diabetics and lifting weights? Because I know.
No.
Okay.
No. As long as, you know, it's proper technique. Weightlifting is good. You know, it's an exercise. Now you're holding your breath. That's on you. You know, that's right. Not on the weight bar. There's no real restrictions until you would have had a bunch of complications. And hopefully it doesn't come to that. If you're doing those things, hopefully you're not getting those complications. So.
All right. Quick, quick conversation about diabetes with Bubba as he's had his lifelong journey with dealing with diabetes. And again, for him, it was kind of genetic and then also a combination of poor exercise and diet, things like that. So another reminder, take care of yourself, eat healthy, exercise, be a good, positive, encouraging example to the athletes you're working with. So, and this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/diabetes. I'm talking with Bubba Wilson, also one of the AT Cares reps, also one of the speaker. He's speaking down at SPATS, and we've done lots of stuff before. So Bubba Wilson on Twitter is ATCLAT Bubba.
Yes.
On Twitter, I am Mr. Jeremy Jackson, and that is a wrap.